For the record, hell, we are the record. KCAA, the Inland Talk Express.
Welcome to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Take a walk on the wild side. Will the birds and the bees survive? Right before me, my newfound hippie side. Once ignore these conspiracies online. Out the window. Sign me up now, make sure you use your smart. Take a walk on the wild side. Will the birds and the bees survive? Would your children lie to see Mother Nature's sigh?
Welcome to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome, Smart Health Talk listeners. Well, having David Binkle, Deputy Director of Los Angeles Unified School District, come on our show today to share with us lessons learned over the past few years of preparation and the last 5 months of implementation of their new healthy meal program is something that a group of us fighting to get sodas out of school 10 years ago could only dream would happen one day. Not only has progress been made by leaps and bounds to revamp beverage offerings at schools around the country, but LA Unified Food Service Department is writing the book on how to serve 650,000 students healthy foods each day. I say he's writing the book on it because it has never been done on this scale before. And with LA Unified School District coming with a long list of hurdles that's difficult enough to get over just serving a meal where there is no kitchen facility, let alone taking on the goals of incorporating more fresh local produce and improving the overall quality of all food offered in the program. They are going into this month 6 of implementation and have began to evaluate what is working the best, what needs some tweaking, and what is just not working at all. So, David, thank you so much for joining us on Smart Health Talk today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, well, our time goes by fast, and I want to get in as much as we can because we're here today to share with everyone interested how to best feed our children at home and at school so that they will stay healthy and improve their ability to learn. So first I wanted to ask you, what motivates you to take on all this outside of it just being a paycheck? And do you think that there is a strong link between nutrition, learning, and behavior that ultimately impacts the potential of our students to achieve success in school and eventually life?
Well, absolutely. There's no better thing to do in life than to help children. You know, what we're doing in Los Angeles, many have tried to look at and emulate. But the Los Angeles Unified School District has done has had a history of the last 10 years of really trying to work on child nutrition and childhood obesity as a focus of health and wellness for our children. So what motivates us is that we've got children now that know how to live healthy, productive lives, and that really is inspiring for us.
Well, and I did see that in, like, some of my research. There was obviously kids that were, like, thrilled to have the new food, the salads, you know, and all the fresh salads, and they could really tell the difference in the quality. But we're going to get into that later on different kinds of reactions. Right now I wanted to bring up the fact that you actually have a dual experience now. There's not too many people out there that have, first of all, ran a school district of this size and that have also been in charge of a program that was serving what many other school districts were serving, like the chicken nuggets, corn dogs, and flavored milk. So now you've had the experience of putting together a program that is serving more fruits and vegetables from local farmers, that you know personally, and you've increased your produce budget from $2 million a year to $20 million, which is like a really big jump. And I'd like to know, like, how does that feel for you as a director, you know, having like that dual experience and now, you know, working in this capacity with Healthy Foods?
Well, it's exciting. This is an exciting time, not only for LA Unified, but also for the rest of the country. With the new healthy meal standards that the First Lady has implemented with the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, yesterday, you know, this is really an exciting time in America to be talking about child nutrition. You know, the real reason the school district is doing this is the why is because one-third of our children in L.A. County are either overweight or obese. And so we've got an epidemic of childhood obesity in this country and in Los Angeles County, and we need to do something about it. So what is inspiring to us is to see the children actually embrace these changes. It's been challenging. There's no question about that. But what's been inspiring to us is to have the children say, you know, this is the first time I've ever participated in the school lunch program. And so there are a lot of, you know, just wonderful things that the school district is doing for our children. We are an innovator. We're a leader. And anytime you are a leader with a program, there's always going to be criticism. But our school board has had a history with our superintendents of really being the national leader. You know, in 2003, we were among the first school districts in the nation to eliminate the access to carbonated beverages to children on campus.
I remember that very well. That was huge.
Years, it's very huge. It's 10 years later. Now it's time to take the next step. In fact, many of the new regulations that have been taking place have been patterned after the things that we're doing in Los Angeles. So, you know, it is inspiring to see what is happening, as well as with the fresh fruits and vegetables you were mentioning. The locally sourcing aspect of this is critical as well. You know, this year we've been able to increase our target of purchasing local fresh fruits and vegetables. In fact, 60% of what we're purchasing when it comes to fresh fruits and vegetables is coming from within 200 miles of Los Angeles. So that is a critical step when it comes to just the local economy, when it using our local farmers, for example, to our local suppliers and not having to truck product across the country to bring to L.A. So we've really focused on locally sourcing. We've focused on the initiatives with the County of Los Angeles, Renew Los Angeles, which is really, you know, transforming major counties and major cities, as well as Mayor Villaraigosa and the Food Policy Council that we're working with, has helped us to focus on the locally sourcing aspect of just buying local, you know, being good stewards, providing employment in our school district as well as employment in our county.
And all of those things add up, and we do have to remember it really has been a team effort. I mean, people within the community have been supportive and been there to help. And when you source locally, doesn't that help reduce some of your food costs to give you more money to buy quality foods?
We've absolutely seen that. In fact, that is one of the changes that we've made is to our procurement model of purchasing. But working with the local community has been, you know, just incredibly, inspiring to see, because whether it's through our California Food Policy Advocate partners or various different colleges like UCLA or USC or Occidental College, you know, the farm-to-school program, the Healthy School Food Coalition initiatives, all the various different partners that are working on this, it really does take a whole community to provide the healthiest, nutritious meals that we can. And yes, it has helped us in terms of the cost of food. You know, what we provide on a daily basis is five different components that the children must be offered, and that includes meat alternate. It includes a fruit and vegetable component. It includes a grain bread component. It includes a dairy component. And all of those various different components, we have averaged about 75 to 80 cents. It's less than a dollar a day that we've spent on those lunch meals in the Los Angeles Unified School District. Having done that last year roughly 120 million times, it makes a lot of difference when you're talking pennies for food as opposed to dollars for food. So, you know, the purchasing local is a big, big, big aspect of what we're trying to do. But the other part of it is we're trying to really focus on fresh fruits and vegetables, less processed food, more healthy nutritional offerings, and that is new to the children. Oftentimes they don't know what a lot of these items are, and so you have to teach, and that's one of the big things, one of the things that we continue to learn is about the education to our community.
Well, that's really great. Well, we only have about 30 seconds, and I was wondering if you could maybe just, like, when you look at that list of the new guidelines that came out, the first in, like, 15 years, when you look down the list, I mean, how does that compare to what you're doing right now? Do you feel like you kind of hit the target there with what they have suggested?
Well, certainly we've implemented most all of the changes, whether it's increasing fresh fruits or vegetables, more whole grains, more whole wheat, low-fat milk. In fact, we've even gone much stronger than the federal government. In our school district, for example, we've eliminated the access to flavored milks.
That's like a really big subject, and I want to hold on that one because I have a whole section that I want to talk about that because I know that's a big issue with a lot of people, and it's time to break. So everyone, don't leave us. We got a lot more to talk about.
And now a word from our Smart Health Talk sponsors.
Naya, Naya, Naya Recycle.
Naya, Canada's most environmentally conscious bottled water, is very proud to announce that its already recyclable bottles are now made from 100% recycled plastic. Naya is the first bottled spring water in the world to do that. So in addition to its recycling activities, Naya uses no new plastic to make its water bottles.
Naya, Naya, Naya.
A natural source of progress.
Be sure to visit our website at smarthealthtalk.com. Welcome back to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome back. Well, we're here with David Binkle, and he's the deputy director for Los Angeles Unified School District, and they have just been in the process since the school year began in September to implement a new healthy meal program. And, David, I kind of wanted to, first of all, take it back to you a little bit. And you were actually, like, perfect for this job because you came from a background where you were used to getting beat up. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, yes.
So tell us what you used to do.
Well, you know, I've been in the school food arena for many years, but I was also a corporate chef for a large restaurant chain. I'm familiar with, the industry as a trained chef. I've been in the hotel, the country club, the fine dining, as well as the college university segment. So, you know, any time that you're providing meals to people, everybody's got an opinion, including the children. And so,
I was thinking about your hockey background, actually.
Yeah, actually, I was a hockey player.
Okay, well,
just outside of Toronto.
Well, I just started thinking about that, and I thought, well, now you're actually kind of getting beat up a little bit differently, but and I was wondering, like, what are some of the punches that you've been having to take lately, and what's your response?
Well, you know, the punches go with the territory. We've had people to say that this food that we're providing our children is too healthy for our kids. It's too.
I can't even comprehend that. I would think that all parents would be thrilled.
Well, you know, it's new and it's change for people, and so anytime you make change, you know, there's lots of ability to criticize what's happening. But, you know, we've asked our community to give us a chance, and what we're trying to do is educate the why we're doing this. So, you know, I think as we keep rolling it out, we keep having this put in front of the children are now learning about, you know, quinoa salad, they're learning about hummus, they're learning about a variety of different things like vegetable tamales that are made without any lard. And so, you know, we've had just a huge increase in the amount of fresh fruits and vegetables that kids are eating. So, you know, what people say is that it's, you know, it's gourmet food, it's too good a quality for our kids, and we say that this is the right thing to do, and we're staying the course on it.
Because there really is a connection between nutrition and learning and behavior, and all these things are interconnected. and have a, you know, support the child becoming successful in school because it supports learning.
It absolutely is critical.
Yeah, and I'm just going to keep saying that because I want people to try to think about all of this in that perspective because, you know, we spend a lot of money sending our kids to school, really. And, you know, without the nutrition part of it, their brain just isn't tuned in the way it should be. And we want to give them all the chance that we can. So what is it that you have seen since you implemented the new meal program in September that has made it all worth it? All that hard work and to get to that point. What have you seen when you go to the schools and see the kids eating the food and hear the feedback? Is there something that's happened that kind of like really made it for you?
Yeah, there's been many different instances where I've gone to schools and the children have said things to me that just, you know, are priceless. I was at a school the other day where a kindergartner, you know, he asked me if kind of tugged on my pant leg and he said, you know, sir, can I ask you a question? And I said, of course. And he, you know, I said, what's your name? And he told me his name and I said, what is it? And he said, I'd like to be the official spokesperson of the new healthy menu for the school district because I think it's terrific. And, you know, when you get some response like that from a kindergartner, and I was at another school, you know, last week, and a 9-year-old a little girl, she said, you know, I tell my friends all the time to eat it, and, you know, and I said, well, that's great. And she said, you know,
a future dietitian.
Possibly so. Or chef.
That's true.
Yeah, so she, you know, she said this is the right thing to do. Stay the course, what you're doing, and you know,
that's so cute.
Well, that's terrific. So
there's all kinds
of cases like that.
I think that would make it for me too. So you're really working hard to connect with local farmers. Can you tell us, you know, what that process has been like for you and the farmer, and give us an example of some of the conversations you guys have together, especially concerning like your future plans and long term goals.
Right. Well, what we've tried to do is have an inclusion. So what we've said is, you know, all farmers that are producing product and crops, you know, in this area, we'd like to talk to them. So we've gone through from a variety of different, you know, aspects through visiting the Santa Monica Farmers Market, for example, and talking to all those different suppliers that are supplying the Santa Monica Farmers Market, as well as later this month we'll be speaking at a symposium for the local farmers in this community. So what we're doing right now is not only talking about what they have available today. For example, we have a vegetable manicotti that uses a butternut squash from the local area. And what we're doing now is talking to those farmers about saying, what is it that you can plant in the ground for next year's crops that we can have on the menu for next year?
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's fingerling potatoes, or whether it's, you know, strawberries or whether it's oranges, whatever it might be, that has really made an impact. One of the things that we've changed is on our orange program, for example, is coming out of Riverside County. And the oranges that we have that are being served to the children today are coming off of 100-year-old orchards of farm.
I think they're in my backyard because I live, I think, pretty close to where those trees are. We have great oranges here in Redlands, let me tell you.
They're terrific, and the kids, you know, say that, and the parents say that. So, you know, that has been a real success story for us, just changing, buying oranges from, you know, Southern California. So, you know, working with the farmers is unique because, you know, the volume that we go through is huge. And so the local farmers have to, you know, really pull together as a collaborative to say, well, it may take 6 or 7 truckloads of oranges to be able to supply the day's menu. And so that's been a challenge for a lot of the farmers because they say, well, I have this, you know, maybe 2 acres of this crop and 10 acres of this crop. And so that's been a real eye-opening discussion for a lot of them because I'll tell them, I'll say, well, we'll take everything you got every day,
uh-huh.
And that may make 1 or 2 days menu, you know. So it's, you know, the farmers often say, well,
oh, we got to feed 650,000 tomorrow.
So it's a bit of a, you know, a shock to them. Is that, well, you need how much? So
I know. I think most people just can't even, you know, fathom. It's like feeding the whole state of Vermont every day. So, you know, I just wanted to let you know, just kind of interject this, that a couple of guests that we had on Smart Health Talk, Kimberly Albright and Don Nishiguchi, which I always have to, like, pause to say his name right, they're local urban foragers with Whole Foods Markets. And between the two of them, they have, like, 60 years of experience working with farmers. And they're just so incredible. I really enjoyed, you know, talking with them. And they said that, you know, they're there for you and would love to, you know, share with you some of their experience working with farmers and, you know, maybe, you know, some goals of, you know, transitioning, reducing pesticide use, you know, stuff like that. So they're used to working with farmers and helping them do achieve those things. And so they actually helped organize that event you're going to be speaking at.
And, well, that's terrific.
Yeah, and they're going to be there. So, you know, you guys can, like, hook up and see, you know, if there's some things that maybe they could help you with. So just wanted to let you know that. And then, okay, so what I had next was we have a whole minute here. Let's see, what could we talk about in a minute? So what happened during the past few months of the new meal rollout, you know, what, first of all, like, what happened that you expected to happen and what happened that you didn't expect to happen, if you can say that in a minute?
Yeah, well, you know, in a short period of time, essentially what happened is what we thought was going to happen.
Uh-huh.
Last year, we actually tested each one of the items that we put on the menu, the new items, over 30,000 times. So the items that we serve to children this year were tested a grand total of 700,000 times last year. And so what we took was a 75% acceptance level of, you know, three-quarters of the children saying they liked it. So what we thought was obviously there was going to be some kids that said, well, I don't like that. And so we had a dip in participation to start the school year for a variety of different reasons, including our school district decline in enrollment. But, you know, what happened was that the children didn't know what a lot of this food was. And so what we've had to do is keep putting it in front of them, keep showing them, keep teaching them, and just say, here, try it. You know, give it a chance, try it. And so what we've seen is with a lot more kids trying it today, you know, there is, you know, flat participation in terms of about the same amount of meals we served last year. But what we've also seen is that there are children, you know, that through their parents have said, well, they don't like this or they don't like that. And we anticipated some of that. So some of the lessons learned that we've got, you know, are the education about teaching the community, about training our staff, about showing the reasons why are some of the challenges. But certainly when you're serving, you know, as big a school district, the 710 square miles of the school district, you know, there's a lot of education to be had.
Okay, well, that was a great way to break, and we have, believe me, we have a lot more issues on to talk about on the realities of what it's like to feed 650,000 kids at how many different campuses do you have?
Well, we have 1,094 different locations that we serve food in every day.
Okay, and not everyone is all alike, that's for sure. Okay, stay tuned, everyone. We'll be back.
And now a word from our Smart Health Talk sponsors.
A precious deposit that came from the mightiest of mountains, created from the strongest forces of nature, and lie hidden for 15 million years beneath the surface of a remote desert, has now been found. A mineral deposit like no other, nature in its most perfect form. Minerals are one of the key foundations of life and may not always be complete in food, but you can now have all that nature has to offer in one pure source. Ion Charge Minerals bring you 57 ionic minerals to nourish your body with the raw materials it needs to rebuild, revitalize, and help generate energy within every cell. Experience mineral power and the new energy and endurance that is yours when you give your body what it needs to build a stronger you. Visit IonChargeMinerals.com or go to Smart Health Talk website and find out how you can benefit from the power of minerals today.
Be sure to visit our website at SmartHealthTalk.com. Welcome back to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome back. We're here with David Binkle. He's the deputy director for LA Unified School District, and we're talking about their healthy school meal programs that they've implemented since September. And I think that there's, you know, some people out there that they probably visualize students at lunch leisurely eating these meals. But tell us, David, like, what is the reality for students trying to eat breakfast and lunch at school?
Sure. The reality is a stark contrast to that. The reality is they have about 20 minutes to eat their meal. So by the time they get into the line, oftentimes the lines are very, very long. Most of our schools that were built before the National School Lunch Program was put in place in 1946. And so a lot of the schools have no cafeterias. A lot of the schools have no eating area. And so the reality of it is our children have to eat outside. And so that makes it difficult to provide things like salad bars and those kinds of, meal programs for the kids. But, the reality is they have very little time to eat, and that's one of the things we've really tried to focus on, is to giving kids more time to eat in the school district. In fact, our school board had put a board motion in place that all children would have at least a minimum of 20 minutes to eat, and so that's a challenge for the school district and the administrators to try to make that work into their daily bell schedule. And then on top of that is a lot of the schools, the amount of children that are at the schools, and maybe 2,000 or 3,000 kids that we're trying to feed in a 30-minute period. And so the children, often get frustrated, and then if they're in line for 10 minutes or so waiting to get their food, then they'll only have maybe 10 or 15 minutes to eat. And so that's very difficult to do if you're a small child. And, it's things that we're working on constantly is to try to provide a better meal program for our kids. But the realities of it is that we're providing, a meal to a child about every 6 to 10 seconds in the school district. So having to make a choice of what's available to them, having to get through the line, having to go sit down, to eat their meal is a real challenge for schools, for administrators to make that work in their bell schedules on a daily basis. But, certainly we're trying to do the best we possibly can in our schools. And
so the staff at the school, the administration and all of that really play a big role in the success of these programs.
Well, and especially the success of our program in our food service department. We've got roughly 4,500 employees who do an amazing job every day. Most of them are parents of the kids in our schools. And so, they have our kids' best interest at heart. And, it's a lot of work to do in a short period of time and then to turn around and do it, a couple of hours later from breakfast to lunch is, clearly a big challenge. But the budget issues the school district is facing, having to, reduce faculty and staff because of the state of California budget issues, it puts a lot of pressure on our school administrators because oftentimes they don't have enough supervision to be able to monitor the children. And so that leads to, some real challenges of trying to get kids fed as well.
And another thing I think people kind of visualize in their head, or they would like to see, they think it should be a goal for us, is, for you to be preparing meals at the schools and for the kids to be getting like a home-cooked meal every day. But like you said, a lot of these places were built even before 1946. And so there is no kitchen facilities. And so what you do have, which I think some people may not know, is you do have a central facility, and you have 35 delivery trucks that bring meals to those, 1,095 different locations. And so why did the district decide to put their money into this facility as opposed to remodeling the schools to have kitchens so that they could have more of those, like, home-cooked type of meals?
Yeah, certainly the decisions that were made in the 60s and 70s were, clearly impacting what the meal program is today. The Board of Education in the 1970s made the decision, rather than putting a bond election out to build cafeterias and build kitchens at schools, that they would build a central food production facility in East Los Angeles. And that central food production facility was originally designed for you know, less than 50,000 meals that would be distributed to school meals across the, you know, the county. Well, that facility today provides over 450 of our locations with meals. And, you know, when you don't have the cooking facilities, obviously cooking equipment costs a lot of money. And so when you're trying to prepare meals in a facility that's not designed for that, the board made the decision back in the 70s to go this direction. But then when you look at the enrollment of the schools, and this is where our school building program has come, you know, into play, is building new schools has really helped us to take the opportunity to reduce down the amount of children on that campus. But just, you know, a year ago or so was the last year. In fact, we have about 20 schools left or so that are on a year-round calendar, simply because there was not enough seats for the children in Los Angeles. So this next year we're having an early start calendar. We'll start school in August, and all schools will be on the traditional based calendar. And so that gives us an opportunity to be able to provide meals at all the new schools that the community has allowed us to build. And that has made an impact because we're able to serve more children faster through those new schools as opposed to the older schools that were not designed that way.
And even with the new program the way it is now, that you're finding that that's how it's working, right?
Well, even with the new program now, what we've got is such an increase in participation. Back in 2006, we only had about a 17% participation in our secondary schools. Having implemented this new program of, you know, the school meals in L.A. over the last 3 or 4 years, you know, we've increased that participation dramatically. And we're up about 35,000 more meals a day that we're serving, which equates to about 13 million more meals a year. And when you do that with more children eating, obviously the economy has played a big impact. You know, with families, you know, that are struggling in Los Angeles. We have now over 14,000 of our children are certified as homeless in the school district with no fixed address. And so oftentimes this is the only meal that the children get all day and or, you know, at least the best meal that they're going to get. So what
exactly
we're trying to do is provide nutrition for them to not only learn to be good, you know, learners, to live a healthy and productive life that, you know, they can outlive their parents. But, you know, at the same token, what we're also trying to do is teach them about why they should be eating these types of things. We've got children in our school district, you know, with type 2 diabetes and, you know, as young as 3, 4 years old. We've got to do something
really
about that. You know, it's a critical factor when it comes to the medical condition, you know, of our children. Just 4 years ago, we had roughly 300 or 400 kids on special diets. Now we have thousands. And they may have allergies. They may have, you know, lactose-free intolerance. There's all kinds of different types of, you know, medical issues with their special diets that we have to accommodate. And so, you know, there is clearly a need to do this, but, you know, we don't want to provide empty calories. We don't want to provide, you know, the unhealthy, fatty, sugary, salty foods. And that's what the children are used to eating. And so even with the Let's Move initiative, we were awarded 490 of our schools were awarded the Healthy U.S. School Challenge, which is the Michelle Obama Let's Move initiative. And that is a real focus of, you know, eliminating the added sugars, the high salt, and the high fat in the food. So it's the right thing to do that we're doing. You know,
well, you're doing a lot. I don't think people realize that, you know, they say, oh, we're spending this money on school meal programs. But in the long term, the amount of money we can potentially save by preventing diabetes. I mean, one case of diabetes can cost, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars over a lifetime. So we could be saving, you know, potentially billions here in healthcare costs. So we have to break right now, but we're going to come back and we're going to switch from food to beverages. So stay tuned.
And now a word from our Smart Health Talk sponsors.
A precious deposit that came from the mightiest of mountains, created from the strongest forces of nature, and lie hidden for 15 million years beneath the surface of a remote desert, has now been found. A mineral deposit like no other, nature in its most perfect form. Minerals are one of the key foundations of life and may not always be complete in food, but you can now have all that nature has to offer in one pure source. Ion Charge Minerals bring you 57 ionic minerals to nourish your body with the raw materials it needs to rebuild, revitalize, and help generate energy within every cell. Experience mineral power and the new energy and endurance that is yours when you give your body what it needs to build a stronger you. Visit IonChargeMinerals.com or go to Smart Health Talk website and find out how you can benefit from the power of minerals today.
Be sure to visit our website at SmartHealthTalk.com. Welcome back to Smart Health Talk with your host, Elaine McFadden.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here with David Binkle from LA Unified School District, and we're now going to talk about beverages. And we've got about 6 minutes left, and I have three beverages I wanted to talk about. I wanted to, you know, first of all, with the flavored milk, you know, when I started researching flavored milk, and to make something taste like strawberry, people don't realize it. It's like 30 chemicals, and when I looked at those chemicals, I mean, you had to be a chemist to even be able to know what the heck they were. And this is what's going into the milk, besides the sugar, which is high fructose corn syrup and probably GMO. And so I, you know, applaud you on, you know, getting that stuff out of there and not even starting the kids, the little kids, you know, on that. It's like, why even go there? So I really wanted to applaud you on that. I'm just wondering, can you give us a report really quickly on, like, the numbers? I'm sure people are wondering, you know, are, you know, like 75% of the kids probably were taking flavored milk before and now they don't have it. So, I mean, has that really impacted your program?
Well, you know, first off, I want to applaud our superintendent, Dr. John Deese.
And that's who I meant to give credit to, and thank you for doing that. Yes, yeah. Your superintendent really took the lead on that.
He really has, and our Board of Education has taken the lead on all of our, you know, child nutrition policies. You know, we dropped about 5% in terms of participation on the milk program. So when people, you know, look at it, is it really going to be that big a drastic change? Some children obviously have been accustomed to drinking chocolate milk. And, you know, clearly what we've looked at is the added sugars. We've looked at the impact, as you mentioned, about all the various different additives. And we just didn't feel like it was the best alternative providing our children, you know, those things. So it's been challenging. We've clearly had people that have asked us to bring it back, but we're going to stay the course on it. We're going to do the right thing. We're going to make sure that, you know, we support our Board of Education, our superintendent, and that we're going to continue to strengthen those nutrition policies that we have.
What about artificially sweetened sodas? Because now we're starting to get some research showing that that could actually be contributing to obesity because it kind of tricks your brain.
Well, one good thing with the new healthy standards that we're putting in the meals program is they also have a sweeping impact on the vending machines as well as the school stores and fundraisers that are sold at schools as well. And so the impact of these other sugar-sweetened beverages or a variety of different types of other beverages, you know, also in our district will have that, you know, banned as well. So I think part of it is when we look at it, you know, we look at these retail brands, but then as we do the research on the statistics of them, you know, there's things that clearly are not appropriate to be provided to our children. So as we go forward in our program, continue to strengthen the nutrition policies is going to make a big impact on those other types of foods that are available.
I'm over here getting a dry throat and needing water, and that was actually the next thing I wanted to talk about. I know you guys have had some problems with, like, you know, being able to serve kids water, getting reimbursed, you know, all the that kind of thing, the drinking fountains, you know. Explain that to us so we can better understand it. Because, of course, water is the number one choice that we want kids to have available.
You know, some good news on that front is that Governor Schwarzenegger mandated last year in a state law that all children would have access to drinking water in the eating area. So, you know, whether the children are allowed to get up and go get that water from a fountain or from a, you know, dispensing unit, you know, clearly is an operational issue at the school. But water, and many people may or may not realize this, as part of the school lunch program is not part of a reimbursable meal. And it's so, you know, it is some things that we had, you know, lobbied for in Washington in this new a dairy product or 100% concentrate fruit juice. And so we'll keep working on that, but, you know, when you don't get reimbursed for the water, then clearly it's an additional charge to the program, and we don't have the existing extra funds to be able to spend on it. But, you know, at least we've got some credit. We're leading the nation. As part of this new USDA law, there is, you know, the ability for children to get to water is in there as well. But just we'd like to see it be part of a reimbursable meal.
If you were given the job to, you know, change the USDA program, what would you change?
Well, the first thing I would do is eliminate the mandate that the children must take a certain amount of food in order to qualify for reimbursement. And that leads to tremendous waste across the nation. Having done this in various different states myself, is I've seen the enormous amount of waste that the program generates. Our board member, Dr. Richard Bladovic, this last year said enough's enough, and he introduced and passed through the Board of Education a food donation program where nonprofits could come and pick up this excess donated food and actually use it in the community to help and assist the families that need it. So, you know, again, we're taking this step beyond the federal government, but if we had our desire, we would eliminate those mandates on the children.
Because their tummies are only so big, right? They're little.
Well, they're only so big, and then on top of that, you know, if a child only wants one thing, they have to take two other things in order to get reimbursed for it. So, you know, it just leads to teaching the children that, you know, will take extra food. And so they're only hungry so, you know, much. But then on top of that, when you start saying, well, you got to take this and you got to take that, it's kind of back to the days when our mother said you can't get up from the table until you're finished eating all
they
your
told
meat.
Me that. I grew up that way, and I could see when I got older that, you know, what are we really teaching kids when we say that, you know, just eat, you know, beyond being hungry, and that leads to obesity, and, you know, we're just not as active as we used to be, and it's going to happen. So, you know, what you've shared with us today, David, was, I think, extremely valuable, and I don't know if people realize, but you guys get calls from all over the country, from all over the world, and people asking how you're doing your program. And so you really are a leader and a role model for many other programs. And I hope that the parents really see the value in it and encourage their kids to be a part of it and participate every day. So thank you so much, David. And, you know, I am going to be calling on you to come back and give us another report at the end of the year to see how things ended up.
Well, it'll be our pleasure, and we appreciate the opportunity to be on.
Okay, well, thank you so much, David. And everyone, we have our 12 smart health resolutions now all available on our website, so go check that out. And this podcast will be available later on tonight, and along with all our other podcasts, so check out our website. Thanks for listening.
Be sure to visit our website at smarthealthtalk.com. Hi, my name is Don Sazi. If you enjoy the Smart Health Talk theme music, visit my website, www.donsazi.com, to hear the complete song, as well as other great music.
Be soon. You're on board KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.